from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
In life, some days are good and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work, both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey. And then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a gel flex grid. The gel flex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the gel flex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines Gel Flex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
Now, it's Jeffrey Wright and company.
Tell your story.
Live on Memphis' sports station, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to Jeffrey Wright and Company. My name is Jeffrey Wright. You can follow me on Twitter, on X, at jwright929 ESPN. As always, you can always listen on your radio dial, 92.9 FM ESPN, 680 AM. Or you can keep up to date wherever you may be on the Odyssey app. Download the Odyssey app today and stay up to date with all of the 92.9 content. You can even rewind. If you miss a segment, you want to go back and listen, you can keep up to date with all of the shows right there on the Odyssey app. Dennis Fuller's producing the program for us. Glad that he is with us. Connor should be walking in here shortly. Connor had a doctor's appointment. In fact, now he is walking in. Let's tell everybody what we got coming up on the program, and then we'll bring Connor in. The Grizzlies have finally come to an agreement with Luke Kennard. We will start there. Then we'll get into a little bit of buy, sell, short, or go to Reddit. We'll talk some college football with David Cobb when he joins us like he does each and every Wednesday. 2:35. We'll get into the list to start the second hour. We got more lists that got people upset. We'll discuss that. Team USA currently in action. They have shaken up the starting lineup again. Joel Embiid out of the starting lineup. Anthony Davis in the starting lineup. Drew Holiday out of the starting lineup. Jason Tatum in the starting lineup as that game is just underway. You can catch that one over on USA. If you want to watch Team USA as they take on South Sudan, a team that took them to the final play back in an exhibition in London a few weeks ago. So we'll update the Olympics as well. We'll get into a couple other things during hour number two. We'll tell your story, and then we will get out of there. But my company this week is the executive producer of The Gabe Kuhn Show. You know him on Twitter, at CDunning929. Connor Dunning, good day, sir.
Good day to you, sir.
All right, before we get into buy, sell, short, or go to Reddit, let's get to the news of the afternoon. Our long local nightmare is over. The waiting game is over. I think nightmare is probably too strong. I think it would have gotten into nightmare territory if you were starting to see maybe other deals, perhaps, whatnot. But nonetheless, team spokesman Adrian Wojnarowski says free agent guard Luke Kennard has agreed to a one-year, $11 million contract to stay with the Memphis Grizzlies, sources told ESPN on Wednesday. Kennard, a key floor spacer for the franchise expected to contend in the Western Conference, averaged 11 points, 3.5 assists, and 45% on three-point shots for the Grizzlies last season. He has shot 43.9% on three-pointers for his career, trailing only Steve Kerr and Hubert Davis all-time, according to ESPN Stats and Information. In his 63 career games with the Grizzlies, Kennard has shot 48%. So I say let's start with the actual deal. I saw Matt Herdlicka on Twitter suggesting he would be surprised if the announced one-year $11 million deal was indeed the exact financials. That might be the old agent talk of that is the maximum amount that the contract could be. I think first, and Matt's very smart on the cap, so I have no reason to push back on that, because I believe Matt's point was, if indeed that is the case, it's just a one-year straight-up $11 million deal that would put the Grizzlies in the tax. That seems unlikely. You worked that hard to get out of the tax, and now you're going to make a deal to get into the tax. That would surprise me. The Grizzlies also have trade exceptions, other exceptions that would qualify and keep them out of the tax. So, again, I think it's probably likely that $11 million is probably the highest he could earn, but I don't know if that will be the cap number. We've not seen that number yet. I think the thing that surprised me the most was one-year deal.
Yeah, definitely. It was my first thought. When you first get the notification from Woj, your first thought is, thank God this is over. We can finally start talking about Luke Kennard being back on the Memphis Grizzlies. Very happy he was back. And then you say, oh, it's only 1 year. Why? You kind of start asking yourself, why is it only 1 year? Not necessarily in a bad way. I actually think that it allows the Memphis Grizzlies to have some flexibility now that I wasn't expecting them to have. I always thought it was going to be somewhere 2 to 10, you know, 2 years, probably $20 million, 10 per is what I thought the contract was going to land around. So I guess we weren't super far off. And at the end of the day, you're still saving $3.8 million by getting him down to that number. I like the deal. I do wish that maybe it was more than 1 year, but I understand that they want to maintain some flexibility. I've also seen some people point out that Marcus Smart and Luke Kennard now would be $31 million combined, so that may be something to keep an eye on. So I think this deal is probably, hey, Luke Kennard might want to test the market after this season. The Grizzlies want to maintain some flexibility, and they found a middle ground between the two.
Yeah, so even over at, is it
Spot Track?
I've never known how to say it.
I call it Spot Track, but I have no idea. I'm pretty sure I'm saying it incorrectly.
Spot Rack.
Spotrack?
Yeah, I've always said Spotrack. I have no idea, but it's the database that accounts for cap space and the salary cap, whatnot. They even list the $11 million contract. They have it highlighted in purple as estimate. So that's...
Where's Barbie Marks when we need him?
Correct. Or... I mean, I'm going to trust Matt on that. Matt's the classic, like, if he's going to say something about the cap, I'm just going to defer to him.
Because if it is $11 million, they're like, what, it's like $1 million into the tax is what they are, just about?
So, right now...
I think they put them at like 107.
Right now, whatever, Spotrack, it's showing they have... $4.7 million of first apron space. But
okay.
that's not the tax, to your point.
Right.
You can go into the tax, and then you have the first apron and then the second apron. So I don't know. Let's see. Okay.
Yeah.
Total allocation.
So this is from Keith Smith. Re-signing Luke Kennard for $11 million puts the Grizzlies at about $1 million into the tax.
Yeah. So... I'm deferring to Matt. I think it's likely that this is the agent making sure that the number is as big as possible.
Right.
And like that makes all the sense.
Hey, tell your story.
Correct. I mean, that's agents literally invented the game of telling your story. Like they're some of the finest at telling your story. I think though, kind of the way that I was thinking about it, if you told me, like I kind of thought it was going to be somewhere between. Like, if you told me it was a 2-year deal, I kind of thought it'd be around 20.
Right.
And if you told me it was a 3-year deal, I thought it was going to be 27, so like 9 a year. But I also thought 3 years was unlikely. because it seems to me that the Grizzlies have targeted, they want to have financial flexibility starting. I didn't think they wanted to do anything more than 2 years, because that's when Jaren's new deal would be up, and I thought they would want to have the ability to move or financially that way. So I thought it was two at 20, but based on kind of the, if you did the graduated math, all right, three at 27, so it's nine, two at 20 is 10, one at 11 makes sense.
It does make sense. And that's why it was very quickly, you're just like, oh, it's only 1 year, but that's not a bad thing. That was just because all of us were expecting, okay, if the Grizzlies, the idea of this was give him more security with years, but less money. That was kind of the whole idea here. But I suppose the idea for Luke Kennard and his agent might be, listen, he's had success with the Memphis Grizzlies. He hasn't really been able to put together a long stretch because of the health of him and the team in general. Let's give him the ability to show out this year and then maybe retest the market again. And then I think on the Grizzlies side, they're probably looking at it and saying, listen, we want Luke Kennard to be a part of this basketball team. We think he makes this team better, which in my opinion, he absolutely does. Having a three-point shooter like him just raises the floor of your team immediately, especially if he's out there with Ja Morant and Desmond Bane. We've seen those numbers, which are excellent. But I also think if something is not working around the deadline,
bingo,
Luke Kennard is the easy piece to move now, because a contending team or a team would want somebody like Luke Kennard. Three-point shooting is a commodity right now in the NBA, and $11 million is super easy to move. And then if you had to combine that with Marcus Smart, I'm not saying that they will, not saying that I want them to, but if you had to, that's like $31 million right there. That's pretty easily movable if you're the Memphis Grizzlies. I also wonder if the idea for the Grizzlies is, right now, we have some wing guys that might not be ready for them to have the big role, but next year, those minutes are probably all going to go to Gigi.
Yeah, so the way that I was looking at it is, from the Grizzlies' perspective, I really like the deal. With the given caveat, we don't know the exact financials, but it seems...
Right. It's going to be in the ballpark.
We know roughly where it's going.
It's not
going
to come out and all of a sudden be 15.
Right. Well, we know it's not going to be more than 11.
Right, like, exactly. We know the cap.
That is the one thing that we know for certain.
Yeah.
But... to your point, it's a one-year deal, and if Luke earns another contract, well, you've already worked out one deal, so now you're ahead of the game. You can probably work out if you want to extend that way. Secondly, with it being a one-year deal, if indeed you do want to make a move at the deadline, which seems to me the most likely time you're going to see the Grizzlies make a move, because it seems at this point they want to test what they believe is the roster they've built.
Right, which is very good.
So you now could have an expiring deal, and it allows for the flexibility of, if indeed you have the situation where Gigi Jackson just cannot be denied and you've got to move him up and move him in the rotation, okay, that's great. If you have brought along some of these other guys and you think, okay, we've got an opportunity to do something else, it gives you the flexibility with an expiring deal. So I like that. And then the most important thing is, I am someone that is in the camp of, much like I've been saying, I'm not as particularly hard on Milwaukee for making the Dame Lillard deal, because I think the reason they made the deal was they really felt in the playoffs it was very difficult for them to score, because everyone was just fouling Giannis, sending him to the line, and it gave them another scoring option. Does it probably make them worse in the regular season? For sure. I think Luke Kennard's kind of like a poor man's version of that, where I think Luke Kennard's value in the playoffs is much greater to the Grizzlies than it is in the regular season.
Sure.
Because on a team that really only has one truly proven shooter in Desmond Bane, this is another proven shooter. And we even saw it in that Lakers series. It was like the perfect microcosm of the Luke experience. As soon as the Grizzlies like make the decision, all right, we're going to take the hit on defense, but we're going to be better offensively. We're putting Luke in. And the very brief returns that we got worked. And to me, it speaks to that, because you have to have more shooting on the floor. And the Grizzlies going into this really two-year stretch that I think is of the most importance, I just thought not bringing back another proven shooter was a big mistake.
I agree. Not having Luke Kennard on this roster would have been a big mistake, and I would be pretty pissed off if he wasn't going to be on the roster, because, like you said, we have seen him run with the offense, and when he is out there and he is healthy, it is pretty dynamite. And the thing about the Grizzlies that we've all been talking about the last few years is the area where they need to improve is half-court offense. And what will help with that? Having a player like Zach Edey setting picks and also having three-point shooting. Both of those things are going to help their half-court offense. And to be quite honest, on a team that was able to maintain a top-10 defense with the carousel of players that they had last year, I just don't think it's going to fall off that much with Luke Kennard being in there. Like, I'll take the few minutes of defense that Luke Kennard's going to have for the three-point shooting, because in basketball, I don't know if everybody knows this, you're trying to outscore people. And I just think that the Grizzlies have the defensive personnel around Luke Kennard to where he's going to be fine. I'm not too worried about it. It's not like he's going to be a traffic cone out there.
No, and the reality is, like, you know pretty quickly if Luke's going to be valuable. If it's a game where he's not hitting shots, it's like, okay.
All right.
And Luke knows the score. So I just look at it also in terms of, I think you've also improved your half-court offense not only just by adding another shooter. Because really, I know we've come up with half-court offense as kind of a buzzword. Define it. Because to me, what I think it really, like, if you think about it, I think if there were some scheme fit and some type of offensive sets that really worked, I think somebody would have figured it out by now.
I think
to me, what it really comes down to is who makes tough shots.
I think specifically for the Grizzlies, it just kind of became Ja figure something out.
Yeah, and I do think also the other reason why I actually, while Zach Edey's going to be a rookie, I do think a big part of Zach being on the floor is he is not a nothing burger on offense.
Right. You can throw him the ball and he can go to work.
Correct. Like, you're going to get more offense than you did from Steven. And that's not a knock on Steven. Like,
right.
Steven clearly made like a concerted effort of, I'm just not going to get into this pecking order dispute. I'll do the dirty work. I'm going to set my picks, but we're not worried about me being an option. Well, think about it in terms of spacing. What we saw in the playoffs is teams just started packing the paint in more so. Now with Edey, you just can't like truly sit back.
Right.
So I overall like it. Okay, so that brings us to the roster in totality. So I got the old spreadsheet out in between shows. And so I took a 3-year average of PER score. So player efficiency rating, Hollinger, not a perfect stat, but it's a good stat.
Good stat.
Okay, so Ja Morant in nine games last year, still was a 20.8. In 22-23, he was a 23.5. In 21-22, he was a 24.5 for an average roughly of 23. So that's basically the number that we've seen. Like, that's what you know you're going to get. League average is 15 for reference.
Right.
Marcus Smart's 3-year average is about 12.5. Now, the one thing I would point out, it was 3 years ago, it was a 13.7. 2 years ago, it was a 12.2. Last year, it's 11.95. It is descending, but I also think, to a certain degree, not really fair. He didn't play a ton. And he was also streaky shooting, and so that's obviously going to be a huge part of it.
Well, and weirdly enough, if you actually break down the numbers, he was having his best defensive year since his Defensive Player of the Year award win.
Yeah, I mean, I'm willing to give him a pass.
He's also a bit of a chucker, and PER doesn't like chuckers.
Correct.
Look at Dylan Brooks.
So Desmond Bane's 3-year average, 3 seasons ago, 17.6. 2 seasons ago, 19.3. Last season, 18.7. So roughly 18.5, mm-hmm. And that's his last two numbers are within a point. So right now we got Ja basically at 23, Smart around a 13, Dez at about an 18.5, Jaren about 18.8, Edey unknown. I still think though Edey can recreate the production that you got from Steven Adams, and to me, I think I'm not going to be surprised if we look up at the end of the year and Edey was giving them more offensively than Adams did and overall better fit. I'm not saying it's a given, but to me, I'm closer to willing to bet on that simply because I think the lob game is going to be a huge part for Ja. Because like one thing we've always talked about, we've never really seen Ja get the two-man game rolling with Jaren. Maybe that's just not Like, that's not meant to be. Like, that's not the style of play. It's asking Jaren to be something maybe that he's not. I do think with Edie, the increased offensive attention that he's going to garner, I think it makes them better.
Yeah.
Okay, so now let's go to the guys that we think are going to get the second rotation. I don't know how it exactly is going to sort itself out, but I feel comfortable in saying this. The next five guys that are going to get the most minutes in some order is this, and you tell me if you disagree. Vince Williams, Brandon Clark,
mm-hmm.
Luke,
yep,
Santi Gigi.
Yep, that's the exact 10 I have.
So right now the Grizzlies do not have a single player. Now granted, Vince and Gigi's are 1 year of data and somewhat of a year with not a lot of high leverage games. But Vince is at 12.9, Gigi's at 13.8, Luke 13.2, Santi actually had a Santi's PER last year versus the previous year, to me, eye test wise, you would have thought it was significant. It was like 0.8.
Really?
Yes.
Up or down?
So he was down slightly.
Okay.
So he was a 14 in 2 years ago, and he was a 13 last year. But overall, there's a legitimate case to be made. 10-man rotation, this is the best team the Grizzlies ever had.
Oh, yeah. I think it's, in my opinion, you can definitely make the argument it's the best team of the Ja Morant, Taylor Jenkins, Jaren Jackson Jr. era. It's like, it is absolutely the best team that they have had. We asked Eric Hasseltine about this on Gabe's show not too long ago, and he still talked about the team that lost to the Warriors in that series.
So, I know the... And I think it's an interesting question.
It's probably up between those two.
I think there are four teams that could qualify.
Okay.
The team that lost to the Warriors in 22.
So 2 years ago.
That team would qualify because that bench was hellacious.
Well, and if Adams is healthy and if Ja is healthy, that is another one of, if everybody is healthy, it probably looks different.
The 15 team, which I think organizationally, the people that were around the team, they believe that was the best team. The 2015 team that also lost to the Warriors in six when the Warriors won their first title. The 2013 team is obviously the team that got the furthest. That's the team that made the Western Conference Finals. I still would argue that was more circumstantial. That was the breaks falling your way.
Yeah, wasn't Russell Westbrook hurt
Westbrook
in the
got
series?
Hurt.
Yeah.
Westbrook got hurt, I believe, the previous series and didn't even play. Now, the Grizzlies beat him in five.
Right.
I mean, it's entirely possible.
They still whooped him.
It's entirely possible the Grizzlies just bully them and beat them. I mean, we saw highly competitive series between the Warriors and the Grizzlies, and that could have been maybe just the Grizzlies' year. I contend, even though the regular season numbers wouldn't bear it out, the team that I still think had probably that I would put it up against is the 2011 team, but we just didn't know at the time.
Right.
So that team finishes as the 8th seed, but they kind of like strategically wanted to be the 8th seed. They knew the Spurs were wounded. They liked the matchup, and that team had started to figure it out. And at the end, the team that we saw in the playoffs was a better team than what their numbers had shown throughout the regular season.
A lot of people picked them to win that series.
Correct.
They thought that they would catch
because
the Spurs.
Of the injuries
it was
and whatnot.
Different than the Warriors beating the Mavericks 8-1. It just felt different. It didn't feel as much as an upset because, to your point, the Grizzlies really started to gain steam at the end of the season, and their depth and chemistry was off the charts.
Same thing. So if you're looking at, in terms of 1 through 10, I think I would narrow it down. So I'd probably take 15 out. I don't feel like that team was nearly as deep because we saw as soon as Tony got hurt, they had problems. And when the Warriors were no longer forced to guard Tony, the Grizzlies' ability to score really, really lacked. So I would take them out. And to me now it becomes a question of this team versus the team 2 years ago versus the 11 team. And the thing that I think that's interesting about those two other teams is we don't know what the future holds, but it's entirely possible the two best shots at a title, an actual title, were the 11 playoffs and the 22 playoffs. And the case would be as such. Number one, you had really good players on cheaper deals. Because, you know, I don't think he'd paid Conley yet at that point. So, therefore, when you have starters that are cheap, you have better depth. The other thing is, when you look at that 2011 run, the Thunder, you lose 2-7 with multiple overtime games. And really, that series could have gone either way. Well, the Thunder handle the Mavs pretty well. The Mavs end up handling the Thunder the next series, but the Grizzlies had matched up very well with the Mavs that season. And the Heat were still in the first year of LeBron, the big three, kind of figuring it out. They hadn't found the right mix. LeBron had tried to get Spoelstra fired. Pat Riley said, go to hell. And like they were still working out the kinks. So that could have been, like, if you're just talking best chance to put the trophy in the case, that could have been it. Also, the same thing with 22, you realize now, like with the gift of hindsight, we didn't really know how to feel because it's kind of the same. It was the same situation. It was just fun to be in the playoffs and to win in the playoffs. And so you're just kind of enjoying the ride when you realize, you know, if Ja's layup goes in game one and the Grizzlies end up beating the Warriors, well, the Warriors won the title. Like, the Grizzlies gave the Warriors as many games as anyone else did, including Boston. Both series went 6 games. That was the most.
It is funny how many times we've heard from Warriors people like, Grizzlies gave them the best shot in the playoffs that year, and you're like, shut up. It's just, you know, salt in the wound.
Yeah, and I mean, I also think that it makes sense as to why the Warriors ended up winning that series. Like, that was a deeply experienced team that had been there before and knew how to get it done. Because, honestly, of all the Warriors championship teams, that's the weakest in my mind.
Oh, 2022?
Yeah.
Oh, without a doubt. It's not even close.
But, I mean, that team got it done just kind of by knowing what to do. And the moment was never too big for them. Like, that was kind of their story. So, stacking it up, obviously we got to wait until the season plays. But I think this legitimately, especially considering the fact that you have 3 guys. And really, I guess you could say 4. You have 4 guys commanding so much money. The fact that you're still able to build a team with pretty good depth, I tip my cap to the front office.
It's impressive. It's really impressive. I will add, I have always maintained that 2015 was their best shot at the title. And it's just because if you get past the Warriors, you're playing a Rockets team that just did not want to win basketball games in the big moments. They just didn't want to win. And then you would have gone up against the Cleveland team without Kyrie and without Kevin Love. So it would have been the Grizzlies versus LeBron James. And I think in that season, the Grizzlies had won the series when they played them. So that's why I maintain that 2015 was their best shot. But the point that you were making about
to
depth,
your point, if all things are equal, I think I agree.
Yeah.
But I also, it's the same thing when we talk about would Denver have given Boston a better series? I understand what people are saying, but what I'm saying is you have to take what that team was at that moment.
Right.
Mike had a broken face.
And Tony had a hurt hamstring.
And Tony couldn't move.
Yeah.
So that team, asking them to win a title, I don't know.
Well,
whereas the 11 team, like, yes, they didn't have Rudy Gay, but other than that, everybody was pretty freaking solid at
Imagine.
That point.
Imagine. Sam Young. Grizzlies legend Sam Young. I feel like we don't talk about him enough in Grizzlies lore.
The 45-year-old, 24-year-old.
Darrell Arthur, too.
Yeah.
God, he could hoop. He was so good. He was one of my favorite players. But, no, I agree with you. I think that this team, this season, has a shot to be the best one we have had in Memphis. And now, that is with the caveat of we do have 3 kind of question marks still, I think, within the rotation.
Oh, I think
one is Zach Edey. No pun intended there. But he is just the biggest question mark. If he hits, this team could win 55 games. If he doesn't hit, it's going to be a bit more of a struggle. I tend to lean that he's going to hit. I don't think he's going to be a bust by any means, but we have to see what his production's actually going to look like. We have a okay sample size with the 1 Walker Kessler game, but I still need to see what he looks like against fleeter-footed bigs. You know what I mean?
And furthermore, we've got to see what he looks like when defenses target him more with better players. That's the other thing. In the G League, the one opportunity that you're not going to get to make an evaluation is most of those teams weren't good enough to, with guard play, whatnot, to attack him and put him into the bind that other NBA teams.
It's also just a different game. Like, teams aren't, the guards are just trying to get theirs most of the time, so they're not running offense like they're going to be in the NBA. So it's just, it's going to be a different look for Zach Edey. I still would call him a question mark, even though we all feel warm and fuzzy about it. And then,
I think, to be clear, I'm 100% in agreement.
I do think that Gigi and Vince are still technically question marks because we have not seen them with a regular rotation Memphis Grizzlies. I have no idea what they're going to look like playing big minutes with John Morant, Desmond Bane, and Jaren Jackson Jr. I tend to believe, very much like Zach Edey, it's going to go well, because if it went well playing with G Leaguers and 30 plus guys, you have to assume that it can maintain. I think specifically with Vince, I have less worry than I do Gigi. Not to say I have worry about Gigi. I just think what Vince did is easily replicable. He can do that. He played big-time defense. He was efficient, and he didn't turn the ball over. I think that he can do that when he's playing with guys that he's just not going to have the ball in his hands much. His role is going to be, hey, you're going to be our defensive stopper on the wing, knock down a three when we throw it to you, and don't turn the ball over. That's all he's going to have to do to be successful. I do think that Gigi is going to work out. We saw flashes of it in the summer league, but again, different type of game that is actually in the NBA. Really, it's going to come down to Gigi. Does he hit his open threes? Yeah. Does the three-point shooting that we saw last season...
Without the volume of shots.
Yeah. Does that maintain? Gabe has been saying this since he made his first appearance with the Grizzlies last year, and I actually totally agree with him. They should try to deploy Gigi as their Michael Porter Jr. It's just, you're going to stand over here, we're going to throw you the ball, and if you catch the ball and you feel leather, put it up. Your job is not to try to play make this year, it's not to try to do any of that. You're going to rebound the basketball, you're going to play defense as well as you can, and you're going to shoot the ball if you feel leather, because that's what you're in there to do. And that is one reason, too. I understand some people want to do the whole should Gigi Jackson be a starter conversation. We are way too out ahead of our skis if we're doing that. I think Gigi is perfect for a bench player because his only job is going to be come in and put the ball in the basket, and we know he can do that.
So I think the other thing that's interesting about those three guys that you mentioned, I agree with you. They're all question marks because I'm not going to make a definitive statement when I watch the quality and the caliber of game that the Grizzlies were playing when Gigi was having all of his success.
Right.
Those are not high leverage games. Those are not what the Grizzlies are going to be in this season, or you hope to God. But I put all three, Edey, Vince, and Gigi, in the same category. I think they're question marks, but I lean towards the positive.
Yeah.
Because I've seen enough that lends me, that makes me go, okay, this isn't fake. But the higher the intensity, the more the book gets out on them. Like, yeah, I want to see how it works. I'm with you. I think I probably lean to the one I have the least worry in is Vince, simply because a bad Vince game is like 1-for-8.
Right.
It's not.
But he played awesome defense.
Correct. But he still made things happen, and he's not. It's not the Dylan 2-for-7.
Right. Yeah, that's the thing about Vince. If he doesn't have it, he's not going to shoot the basketball. He's not going to force anything. And he can play make. He can, you know, his assist numbers are pretty good.
And I'm still not, like, I think Gigi has the ability to be a good, very good defender. But it's been up and down on defense. I mean, we've seen, and again, he is the youngest guy on the team with all that caveats. And then with Edey, it's just simply going to be a question of, are teams going to expose him in the way that some draft experts believe? But I still think that, again, I just always fall back to the default position. If you offered every Grizzlies fan a healthy Steven Adams before the draft, everyone would have wanted that. I firmly believe that Zach Edey can replicate what Steven did.
I agree. It's the two guys that would have gotten you closest to it were Donovan Clingan and Zach Edey. Yeah. And you could even make the argument that Edey closer than Donovan Clingan just because of what he can do on the offensive end of the basketball. And that's why I'm with you. I have question marks about these guys, but it's more question marks and excitement. I'm just like, I believe they are going to work out. It's just Brevin Knight. It's the best thing anyone has ever told me in my career. It was the first time year I was ever doing radio. He was like, do not try to make a statement about a player unless you have a sample size, a real sample size, 15 or 20 games will tell you if something is real. And I have taken that advice and applied it to every single player I have ever fallen in love with. And with Vince and Gigi, we have that sample size. With Zach Edey, we just don't have it yet. And weirdly, with Vince and Gigi, we only have one real one that you can really look at.
Yep.
We're still waiting on that second 15 or 20 games to really show us what they can do. And to be honest, we've had this discussion a few times. I do think that last year has warped everybody's brains into thinking that 11 through 15 matters, when in reality, that 10-man rotation that you just read off the piece of paper, if everything goes the way it should in terms of nobody just injuries aren't falling from the sky, those 10 guys are the only 10 guys that are going to matter next year. And if you offered that 10 guys to most Grizzlies fans, I think pretty much everybody would take it. You might have one or two people that are like, I don't like this guy. I don't want this guy. Yeah, I want to draft that guy. Hey, Didi. Most people, if you handed them and said, here's going to be your 10-man rotation next year, I can guarantee you that they're healthy. Do you want to go into the season with it? They would say, yeah, send me in with that.
Yeah, I mean, to me, like, that's the other big question, but it's a different question. It's like, how many games are you getting out of John Morant?
I'm assuming 60.
I mean, that's
65.
That's the thing. And then how healthy are the Grizzlies heading into the playoffs? Because that has been the story. And I suspect it will largely be the same story when we get to the playoffs next year, because I think this team's going to be good. I think this team's going to be fun. And I think it's going to be a reminder of, like, oh, yeah, last year really sucked, but let's just get back.
They were second in the West 2 years in a row.
Yeah.
That matters.
It does. I would say the second one's a little more.
Still matters.
It was a little more.
Jeffrey, what's the motto of this show?
Rule number one, don't tell the story, tell your story. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, David Cobb joins the program. Let's talk some college football with him next. Right here on Jeffrey Wright & Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
In life, some days are good, and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work. Both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey. And then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique, and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sports book on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
Cobb, the Grizzlies have now signed Luke Kennard. I ask you, is this the deepest 1 through 10 the Grizzlies have had? So here's my projected. Maybe. Here's my projected 10. You ready?
Let's go.
Ja, duh. Dez, Jaren. I still think they're going to start Marcus Smart. Like, I'm not saying that they don't maybe make a change. I still think to start the year it's going to be Ja, Marcus Smart, Desmond Bane, Jaren Jackson, and Zach Edey. And then the next five guys that are going to get the most minutes are going to be Vince Williams, Brandon Clark, Luke Kennard, Gigi Jackson, Santi Aldama. When you consider that two guys are basically on max deals, and then you have another two guys that are on $20-plus million deals, that's pretty good depth for a team that's got that much money tied up into that few players.
Yeah, not to mention, even deeper than that, if you want to go, looks like Cam Spencer and Jalen Wells are guys who...
Well, and Pippen looked great, too.
Pippen looked great, too. And those are all guys who played multiple seasons of college basketball. Pippen obviously has a couple of years of professional experience already under his belt. But, I mean, Cam Spencer was in college basketball for half a decade. Jalen Wells, yeah, I know he was late to the game in terms of D1, but he came from D2, so he's played a few years. So they're like older rookies, too. So they are deep. That's great and all, but it all still comes down to Ja Morant.
Yeah.
Because if Ja Morant is not healthy or if Ja Morant is in trouble, then this thing doesn't work. So that's kind of ultimately what it's all about because, yeah, it's great to have depth in the NBA, and that's helpful with just getting through the regular season. But you know, if your stars are not available, then it's all for naught. So, I mean, it's a nice resource, but I don't know that I necessarily feel better about the situation or the season just because they are 10 or 11 deep.
Yeah, I think if you could give me one stat to let me, you know, to let me evaluate how I think the Grizzlies season went, I would say how many games did Ja play? Because weirdly, I do agree with you, like on the sense of it's always about whether or not he's available. I will say the last 18 months, or really I guess maybe the last year, because last summer was still kind of weird. I feel much better about believing that Ja's going to stay out of trouble. I don't have that fear right now.
Hey, I've got the faith too. I got the reverse scratch.
Yeah.
Sneakers the other day. Those are nice, man. I got the old school Grizz colors there with that teal.
Oh yeah.
And the little stripe through them, and then what's the other little old throwback? A little bit of red, you know, from when they came from Vancouver back in the early 2000s. They look nice. I'm ready to put them on.
I do like the old bear logo. It's more ferocious.
Yeah, I do too. Yeah. And we're far enough now to where the old school Grizzly stuff is like legitimately throwback. I mean, I remember everybody being super excited when the team store came out with the throwback stuff about 5 years ago.
Yeah.
And anyway, they look sharp.
We're talking with David Cobb here of CBS Sports. Go follow him on Twitter on X at David W. Cobb. In your mind, as we head into the college football season, like what are the questions that you're thinking about as we head into teams reporting now?
Yeah, it's kind of nice to finally see all the practice videos and even though they're not in pads yet, to see people hitting sleds.
It's good to see even fake football. You know what I mean? Like we're watching like receiver Hard Knocks. Like it's good to it's good. It gets the juices flowing.
Yeah, and more regular press conferences and stuff. I mean, for me, it's a lot of it is about Alabama. One, we're getting more access from Alabama than ever before. So you're going to get assistant coaches talking to the media. You're going to get more players talking to the media than you ever had under Saban. And it comes at a time when there's more questions than ever about Alabama. And my questions with Alabama are largely about the secondary and about the receivers, because we're talking about a lot of youth and a lot of unproven players, both in the secondary and at receiver for Alabama, a team that we are assuming is still clearly in the top 10, maybe even in the top 5, but we're making some leaps with that assumption. So I want to hear what Kalen DeBoer has to say about his receiver group, about his secondary. I want to see what the other players on that team have to say about those guys, because those are the two areas where they kind of got hit. I think they're still going to be really good in the front seven defensively and pretty good up front on offense. And I just have questions. Just questions about some of those perimeter players, though, for Alabama.
Well, I mean, I think another fair question, we've seen Kalen DeBoer run really good offense, but the two quarterbacks that largely did it were Michael Penix Jr., a really accurate thrower, and Jake Haener, who was, you know, a really accurate thrower. While Milroe has a pretty good deep ball. They're, you know, those are different types of passers than Milroe is.
Yeah, what Milroe has that definitely Michael Penix didn't have, though, is the mobility.
Yes, no
and
question.
I love Jake Haener, man. Like, Jake Haener was a freaking beast at Fresno. He was super fun to watch. He was a little bit slight of frame, though, whereas Jalen Milroe, not only is he going to run like Jake Haener did, but he's going to be able to absorb some of the hits, which was what Jake Haener struggled with because he ended up getting banged up. So
no, I feel like the Jake Haener experience was watching him deliver a strike, break a rib, go sit on the sideline on a knee for a play, and then like suck it up and go back in. I feel like that was the Haener experience.
He was the ultimate football guy.
Yeah.
So that was fun. I loved watching him. He was like the – not only was he like the – he wasn't just Pac-12 after dark. He was Mountain West
yes.
after dark, which is like sicko of the sickos. But hey, he ended up getting a look in the NFL. I don't know if he's on a roster now. But no, I love Jalen Milroe with Kalen DeBoer because Kalen DeBoer is a really good quarterback developer. And Alabama's offensive staff was in flux last year. And it was Tommy Reese, right, as coordinator. And,
how could we forget?
You know,
when he tried to play Tyler Buchner.
Right. I don't know if I totally trust Tommy Reese as a quarterback developer. Now he's got one of the best quarterback developers in college football with him. So Jalen Milroe, I think, could be even better than he was last year. And he ended up being pretty good as last season went along.
What's your quarterback ranking tier in the league?
Yeah, I guess I start with Carson Beck just by default. I think a lot of quarterbacks in the SEC would be at the top of the list if they had his weapons, though. So with that in mind, I'm willing to kind of be surprised here. Give me Jackson Arnold, you know, with a plus 1,500 odds to be the best quarterback in the SEC, or a Nico, or even a Garrett Nussmeier. I mean, there's three right there who I'm really interested and anxious to see, because I think those three are just as talented as Carson Beck and Jalen Milroe and Jackson Dart. So I wouldn't be surprised if any one of those three ends up being all SEC caliber. It's just we haven't seen them yet because they were sitting behind other good players.
I think my question with Nussmeier is, and I'd mentioned to Connor, I'm playing the video game a little bit differently, I think, than everybody else is. Like I'm largely like playing Friends Online, or I'm just playing to get used to the game. And so I've just been playing a lot of SEC games just to kind of get a feel for teams one way or the other. I do wonder, like we've seen Kelly win with a lot of different styles of quarterbacks, but when they are at their best, the quarterback is a threat to run. And even if it's a guy like Tommy Reese was, who wasn't like a prolific runner, he was still like a solid college runner. I haven't been wowed by the mobility of Nussmeier. I wonder if we're getting Mettenberger 2.0.
Yeah, but they've also got a different scheme or a different system this year because they brought in Joe Sloan.
Yeah.
As well, I mean, I guess he was already there, but they've
moved. Yeah, whatever. They've changed play callers.
Right. So maybe there's a bit more accommodation there, because if I'm not mistaken, Denbrock went back to Notre Dame and is going to be working with Riley Leonard there, which I love that because Riley Leonard can scoot. Kind of like Jaden Daniels. So you put Denbrock, who just won the Heisman, with Jaden Daniels, with Riley Leonard at Notre Dame. I think that it makes Notre Dame like really interesting, because their defense is sick. It's going to be really good. Now you add a dynamic playmaker and a quarterback, which they have rarely had. I think, anyway, that's a little bit of a tangent there, but I'm excited.
Well, I mean,
about
they
Notre
play
Dame
A&M today. Week one, and that's a massive game for both teams.
It is. Yeah, that's a interesting dynamic with Mike Elko, now the head coach at Texas A&M, taking on his former quarterback and Riley Leonard. They were both together at Duke last year, which I actually think that gives A&M a little bit of a leg up, because Mike Elko knows everything.
I think Elko is going to have a pretty good plan for Leonard.
Right. He knows what Riley Leonard likes to do. But as it pertains to LSU, I think that's a fair concern. But I still think Garrett Nussmeier is going to throw for, you know, 3,800 yards or something ridiculous this year at LSU.
No, let's be clear. If LSU doesn't reach its ceiling this year, I don't think it's going to be the offense. I think it's going to be the other side of the ball.
All right. I love the coordinator hire, though, bringing in Blake Baker from Missouri.
What do we think? What's going to be the week one overreaction game. Like the classic Florida hosting Utah in the swamp, Florida's back. Like, what's our week one overreaction game going to be? I think most would point to, I guess you could make a case for LSU-USC because whoever wins that's going to feel pretty good. But I don't know. What are you penciling in?
Well, Miami, Florida is in that conversation for sure. Because if Florida loses, everyone's going to be writing the Billy Napier career obit. By the same token, if Miami loses that game, Mario Cristobal, he's going to be 12-14 if they lose that game. I mean, come on, like that's just pathetic. So there's a lot on the line for both those teams and both those coaches. Another one, though, that could absolutely get in that mix is Clemson and Georgia, because there's a pretty good chance that Clemson just gets wiped off the map in week one by Georgia, written off completely. All the criticism of Dabo hits an early season peak, and then they go and disappear into the ACC for a while and reemerge in November, and they've got, you know, 10 wins or something. So we might overreact to how bad Clemson looks in week one when it could just be a situation where they are up against literally the best team in college football.
No, that was another thing playing the game that you realize, even in comparing to Alabama's defense, Georgia's defense on that video game is so freaking fast that you're just reminded, it's like, oh yeah, they still haven't lost a regular season game in 3 years.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. 24-0 in SEC regular season games over the last 3 years. I mean, yeah, it's just absurd. And they got both coordinators back. They got their starting quarterback returning. Their schedule is tougher, but that's okay because there is margin for error now for Georgia that there wasn't before. They lost one game. They lost the SEC championship game last year and didn't make the playoff. Well, this year with the type of schedule that Georgia has, they could very easily get into the playoff as a three-loss team. And let me tell you, I don't think Georgia's going to lose three games. So I think there's a real good chance that Georgia is standing at the top of the heap come season's end.
All right, if Georgia doesn't get it done this year, what happened?
Well, I guess I'd have to say quarterback injury. They would still be really good because you can put in another player there at quarterback. And let's go this route, Jeffrey. Let's say there's too much off-field distraction, because if he doesn't come down hard on Ra-Ra Thomas for a second domestic violence charge in a year's time, and he's driving issues, we've seen him continue to mount. If there is ascension in that locker room, an uproar or unrest or whatever you want to call it, like that could be a factor that knocks Georgia off course here a little bit. And a lot of the outside and external conversation around Georgia is centered on that right now. And if some of that starts to seep into the locker room, let's not pretend like that couldn't become an issue.
If it goes wrong for Texas, what do you think happened?
Oh, well, they'd be fine if there was a quarterback injury. They got a kid named Arch Manning as their backup. I think it would be receiver issues there because, I mean, look at it. I mean, they're losing almost all of their top targets from a year ago. And, yeah, like they're still super talented there. Isaiah Bond comes to mind as a transfer from Alabama who's going to be pretty incredible for Texas. But that discounts. This isn't a video game. And you do have to have chemistry between quarterback and wide receiver. So, I mean, there's a scenario there where it takes them a while to get on the same page. Texas, you're now in the SEC, and there aren't a whole lot of gimmies. And if you're not dialed in and ready to go pretty early with the schedule they play, then I think maybe a lack of quarterback receiver chemistry could be an issue there.
Well, I mean, to your point, I mean, while we both think Michigan's going to be a diminished team, that's still going to be a physical football team. Like, I think the other question I have with Texas is, you know, you've got to replace some studs up front defensively. And those guys, like we saw, they made up for a lot of problems that they had in the secondary. Like, what if you don't really replace those guys up front and that defense even takes a step back? Because it wasn't like it was a great defense. It was like a serviceable defense.
Yeah, you're right. Like, they got to replace Sweat and then Murphy. They were both, you know, highly selected draft picks at defensive tackle. And you go to Michigan, well, they've got Donovan Edwards still. So they don't have J.J. McCarthy. Their offense isn't going to be super dynamic or super explosive. But Michigan's still the type of team that can win a game by 10 or more points by throwing 15 or fewer passes because they're that strong, they're that physical, they're that good defensively. So, yeah, if Donovan Edwards can reel off 5 or 6 yards a pop against Texas at a big house, that could be an early trap game for Texas. And then, you know, they also have to play Oklahoma still. They got to play Georgia. I mean, this is not going to be
– back-to-back, by the way.
It's not a slam-dunk automatic write them in the playoff situation with Texas. There are more questions with Texas to me than there are with Georgia.
Cobb, we appreciate it, buddy.
Yeah, man, no problem.
That is David Cobb of CBS Sports. Want to let you know that is the last week to take advantage of the Summer of 1,000 engagements going on through the end of the week. Saturday's the last day to take advantage of the Summer of 1,000 engagements over at Robert Irwin Jewelers. That means you can still get up to 40% off engagement rings, and with purchases of $24.95 or more, you can get the free vacation for two. And it goes up all the way to, you can get from, you know, 3-night stays at Myrtle Beach, 3-night stays at Fort Lauderdale, Miami, Anaheim, Las Vegas, all the way up to getting an all-expense paid cruise, but a free cruise with a on-store credit, or I should say on-ship credit, as well as airfare to Las Vegas, Orlando. Just go and check out all the deals going on to get the vacation with your purchase. Also, right now, you can take advantage of the Wedding Band Expo that's going on right now. Buy one wedding band and get a second one half off, 0% down, also 0% interest for 12 months. You can also get a free silicone band with the purchase of a men's engagement ring.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their 6 pools on 3 different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy daybeds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.